in both mainstream Western psychology and yogic psychology, ego is considered to be the principle of individuation and an essential part of our natural development. When we're born, if you've spent any time with an infant, an infant that may be several days old is living in a world of more unconditioned awareness, hasn't really learned how to identify any sense of individuality. In fact, not even a sense of where the boundaries of physical self end. An infant is living in a world where they just experience sensations, so awareness is present to different sensations as they come and go. And ego hasn't activated any sense of individuality. But of course, this process starts very quickly. And as a baby is developing, they're being called a name regularly, and over time they start to identify with the name. At some point they start to identify with the boundaries of their skin-bounded body, and as their education continues, they start identifying with being a boy or a girl. They start identifying with being in a particular family and identifying with particular relationships. And then as they go on in life, they start identifying with everything from nationality, social group, religion, all sorts of things. And by the time a child is actively at school, they've got many layers of identity. Now, again, in mainstream psychology, this is an essential thing. And yogic psychology views it in the same way. It's essential for a human being to have a clear sense of self. So the first stage of the human journey is developing clear boundaries of self. Well-developed people in the Western model have very clear boundaries of self. And it's the same in the yogic model. This is the first stage. Now, in mainstream psychology, this becomes the highest level of a human being's development, is to have really healthy ego and very strongly develop boundaries of self so that they can interact with all the other separate selves that comprise the society and have a happy life. Now, yogic psychology really kicks in at this point, because from a yogic psychological viewpoint, it's assumed we've all developed a healthy sense of individuality before we start the process of awakening our higher essence, our higher self. If we haven't already developed that healthy sense of ego and clear boundaries in life, then we're going to have some of the challenges that so many Westerners are experiencing now, because many of us haven't fully developed this first stage of life where we develop those clear boundaries of self before we start the yogic journey. So we're often trying to sort out stuff from our childhood and early years before we, or at the same time that we're trying to awaken to our higher self. So this is very interesting. Being a yoga teacher, a yogic coach, helping people on their journeys when you have this mixture of experience. Now, ego, from the yogic viewpoint, is then a very different kind of principle. So it's the individuation principle, but once you've already got that grounding, you're a somebody, you've become somebody, then really the next stage of life is becoming a nobody. The word for ego, the two most common terms you'll come across for ego in the yogic text, ahamkara. Aham means I, kara is literally I do, the I creator, the I doer. So it's the sense of I do my life. So Patanjali uses also the word asmita, the sense of I-ness. Now these two words, ahamkara, the I doer, the I creator, and asmita, the I-ness, they are very revealing. So the average person, while ego or ahamkara is operating, has a sense that they are doing life or life is doing them in some way. So there's a sense that we are in control of our life or trying to control life, or life is controlling us and we're a victim of life. So underlying this, of course, is a sense of separateness. And for Patanjali, as with all the great yogic sages and rishis, the source of all of our problems is the lack of understanding life. Avidya means ignorance or misunderstanding, non-understanding. And vidya means wisdom, knowledge, understanding things the way they are. Now, when we don't understand that life is inherently whole and one, and that we are life, what's operating is asmita. And asmita is the sense of separateness, that I am separate to everything else. And this sense of separateness gets associated with the body and mind. And the mind then starts to think that I am the doer of my life, that is the ahamkara, I do, I create, I do my life, and I interact with all the other beings, and I'm doing life and life is doing me. Now, if we use an analogy, we could say that when we're under the grip of ego, ahamkara, we're a little bit like a wave on the surface of the ocean. We're like a wave on the surface of the ocean that thinks it's separate to the ocean and that thinks that all the other waves are separate to it. Now, because when we look at the ocean, we know every wave is the ocean. It's just expressing in a particular way in that moment in time and space. But if there was a crazy wave that thought it was separate to the ocean, then that would reflect what human beings under the grip of ego or ahamkara are experiencing. They experience that they are separate to life. So I am my own person, I am separate to you, I'm separate to everybody else, I'm separate to everything. This is what ego is doing. It's creating separateness and disconnection, when in reality we are all made of the same stuff. We're all made of pure awareness. Now, that crazy wave, we'll call him Willy the Wave, thinking that he's separate to the ocean, his focus on trying to feel good in life is how he is in relationship to all the other separate waves, what he perceives to be separate waves. So when he's feeling good in reference to the other waves. When he's not feeling so good, he's feeling threatened or uncomfortable with the other waves. He might feel, oh wow, I feel so much bigger and stronger than that wave over there. Or I might be intimidated. Wow, I don't feel anything like that wave over there. Gosh, look how beautiful that wave is, how beautifully formed, and I'm nothing like that. Or it could be, wow, I feel I'm definitely a superior wave to that wave. So ego is manifest hearing and judging all of life, as is the ocean, in terms of all the other waves and how we are in relationship to all the other waves. So this is the ego-based life. We get caught in judgment. We divide life up into good and bad and all the other kind of problems that arise from that. And we live in separateness, which creates all our suffering. The goal of yoga is to help Willy the wave realize, hey Willy, you are the ocean. You're the ocean dancing is that unique wave in this moment of space and time. And full enlightenment is when Willy the wave reaches the unquestionably unchanging recognition that he is the ocean. And he's the ocean dancing as that wave, and all the other waves are the ocean dancing in different forms. So enlightenment from the yogic viewpoint is when we recognize we are not separate to life. We are life manifesting in the particular wave as John or Maria or Jason or David or Mario or Aung San or whoever it might be. So this is why ego in the yogic world is a source of problems to us. Patanjali describes as soon as there's avidya, in terms of as soon as we experience life as separate, asmita is operating. That is, ego is operating. And as soon as ego is operating, two tendencies start activated. One he calls raga, which is grasping and trying to hold on to anything we associate feeling good about. This is attachment. Raga, attachment, grasping and holding on to things. And the other tendency is dvesha, dvesha, D-V-E-S-H-A, dvesha, which is aversion, resisting. So whenever ego is operating, dvesha or raga are operating. We're either grasping and trying to hold on to things, usually our expectations. We hold on to our expectations. If at any point we feel disappointed about anyone or anything, we know there must have been some raga, some holding onto an expectation. Otherwise, we wouldn't have felt disappointment. So when we let go of a disappointment, we're letting go of the attachment that is keeping us in ignorance, keeping us in a non-understanding state. And it's the same if we're caught resisting something, we're resisting having a conversation with someone, we resist feelings in our body, we resist anything. In fact, how you become anxious, the mechanic of becoming anxious is you resist scenarios in the mind, as you resist thoughts, or you resist sensations in the body. The more you resist, the more anxious you'll become. And if you resist your resistance, you resist your fear, that's how you go into high levels of panic. So whenever there is raga or dvesha, attachment or aversion, ego is operating and it's creating suffering. And the goal of yoga is to be free of suffering, is to live as a loving, free being, enjoying the flow of life. And that's how we bring maximum benefit to others. So ego is not a dirty word in yoga, it's the individuation process. But in a funny kind of way, the goal of yoga is to go beyond ego. We can describe it in either we transcend ego, we go beyond ego, we dissolve ego, or we could say that our individual egoic essence merges with our universal essence. And it's the same. We no longer identify with our separateness primarily, but we primarily identify with our unbounded universal nature. We are life manifesting in the unique individuality that is there. Okay, this gives you a little sense of the role of ego in yoga. Namaste.